This is VOA News, reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. President Joe Biden responded to reporters' questions about the governors of Texas and Mississippi ending mask mandates and allowing businesses to fully reopen, saying, in his words, it's a big mistake amid the pandemic. Biden said, as the nation makes progress with vaccinations, the last thing we need is the Neanderthal thinking that in the meantime, everything's fine. During the previous administration of Republican President Donald Trump, who downplayed the severity of COVID-19 despite eventually becoming infected himself, not wearing a mask became a political statement. Since taking office in January, Biden and top federal health officials repeatedly have emphasized mask wearing and social distancing while the country escalates the number of Americans being vaccinated against the virus. The U.S. House of Representatives canceled its planned Thursday session after the Capitol Police warned of a possible plot by a militia group to breach the building, and threat that echoed the deadly January 6 attack. Authorities have said right-wing extremists were part of a mob of supporters of former President Trump that stormed the Capitol in January, interrupting the formal congressional certification of President Joe Biden's election victory. Thursday marks the date when some right-wing conspiracy theorists have falsely claimed that Trump, defeated by Biden in the November 3rd election, will be sworn in for a second term. The Justice Department has charged more than 300 people with taking part in the Capitol siege, in which five people, including a police officer, were killed. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com. Via remote, this is VOA News. The top intelligence officials of the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security made a troubling acknowledgement Wednesday in congressional testimony. Neither agency had garnered intelligence indicating that supporters of former President Trump would storm the Capitol on January 6th in an effort to overturn the November election results. The testimony comes amid a growing controversy over whether the FBI and other agencies missed warning signs in the lead-up to the Capitol attack and then failed to adequately warn officials responsible for securing the government complex. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said Wednesday he would not resign in wake of a series of sexual misconduct accusations leveled against him by young women, but offered a fresh apology and vowed to fully cooperate with a review by the state's attorney general. An attorney for one of the three women accusing Cuomo of misconduct said the governor's apology was full of falsehoods. Cuomo said his behavior toward the women who have accused him of misconduct was unintentional and that maintained that he never touched anyone inappropriately. Complaints about sexual misconduct emerged after questions mounted over Cuomo's handling of the coronavirus pandemic last year as it tore through nursing homes. New York State politicians, many of them fellow Democrats, have said that Cuomo tried to silence his critics and routinely governed through intimidation. The Pentagon says a U.S. contractor died Wednesday when at least 10 rockets slammed into an airbase housing U.S. and other coalition troops in western Iraq. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby said the contractor suffered a cardiac episode while sheltering in Dodge shortly afterward. Speaking to reporters, President Biden said the rocket strike is being investigated. Biden added, "We're identifying who's responsible and we'll make judgments from that point." The rocket attack was the first since the United States struck Iran's aligned militia targets along the Syria-Iraq border last week, killing one militiaman and stoking fears of another cycle of tit-for-tat attacks that happened more than a year ago. Iraq beefed up security this week as Pope Francis prepares to make his first ever trip to the country. Police were deployed on the streets of Baghdad while troops set up checkpoints around the churches that the pontiff will visit. He's due to arrive on Friday and stay until Monday on a tour that will focus on the difficulties faced by Iraq's hard-pressed Christian community. As always, for details on more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, reporting by remote, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. President Joe Biden renews targeted sanctions on Zimbabwe.
The Zimbabwe authorities have not fulfilled their promises to deliver on human rights, democracy, the rule of law, and good governance.
We'll have reaction from a Zimbabwe provisional official. Kenya received 1 million COVID vaccine doses, dispelling the apprehension in West Africa of taking COVID-19 vaccines. Liberian female candidates fight for their place in the Senate. And Senegalese authorities arrest an opposition official.
There was a big crowd who was trying to accompany him to the Palais de Justice, so that the situation started to be a little bit electric, and then the police decided to arrest him.
And large-scale kidnappings in northern Nigeria threaten education. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. President Joseph Biden has renewed targeted sanctions imposed on some officials of Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party, saying there are no tangible economic and political reforms in Zimbabwe. In a notice to Congress posted on the White House website, President Biden said the sanctions will be in place until March 6, 2022, in line with some provisions of the National Emergencies Act. Renewing Executive Order 13288 of March 6, 2003, Biden said President Emmerson Mnangagwa has not made the necessary political and economic reforms that would warrant terminating the existing targeted sanctions. 83 ruling ZANU-PF officials and 37 companies are under the targeted U.S. sanctions. Human rights lawyer Diwa Mavinga says the Biden administration got it right as human rights violations continue in Zimbabwe.
That the Biden administration has extended sanctions on targeted individuals in Zimbabwe comes as no surprise, given that recently the UK had also slapped targeted sanctions on some security sector individuals on account of human rights abuses. So because the abuses in Zimbabwe are continuing and there are no reforms on the ground, it was expected, most likely, that the U.S. would continue on with targeted sanctions until there is genuine respect for human rights in Zimbabwe.
Do you agree with Biden's view that there are no tangible economic and political reforms in Zimbabwe right now?
It is true that the Zimbabwe authorities have not fulfilled their promises to deliver on human rights, democracy, the rule of law, and good governance. The promises to implement the recommendations of the Motlanthe Commission of Inquiry report, for example, on human rights, those have not been done. Substantive legislative reforms, electoral reforms, have not been done. So there has been no movement towards genuine respect for human rights. And so, in a way, the position taken by the Biden administration reflects the sad reality of human rights. You know, the suffering and the crackdown by the Zimbabwe authorities on human rights defenders, the use of torture, abductions, all these things are continuing in broad daylight in Zimbabwe, unfortunately.
What's the impact of these targeted sanctions on ZANU-PF officials and even the rest of the country?
Targeted sanctions affect only those individuals who are prohibited from traveling to the U.S., to Europe, or to the U.K. But the ZANU-PF administration has been focusing so much on the propaganda of claiming that targeted sanctions have an impact on the people of Zimbabwe, which is not correct. The U.S. government has been, in recent years, been the largest donor supporter to Zimbabwe. It is supported through USAID, it is supported through, you know, providing food aid and things like that. So it is not true that targeted sanctions have an impact on the people of Zimbabwe. But ZANU-PF's propaganda has been so successful as to mislead the nation about the true nature of targeted sanctions. ZANU-PF administration knows what needs to be done to have these targeted sanctions removed, which is simply to respect human rights and the rule of law in Zimbabwe.
That was Diwa Mavinga, a Zimbabwe human rights lawyer, speaking from London with reporter Gabe Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service. However, Bridges Charumbira, ruling ZANU-PF's provisional chairperson in Canada, says the targeted sanctions are hurting Zimbabwe.
It doesn't come as a surprise to us Zimbabweans and ZANU-PF that the Biden administration has renewed these sanctions. We know that in USA, every administration that will come, according to their foreign policy, they will continue to put Zimbabwe, you know, on sanctions. And it is because of the land that we have taken from the white regime that we are being punished on. So we are not surprised. And yes, we will continue to support our government. And the decision of not taking the land back, it is our decision that we've made as Zimbabwe, as a government, as a party, and we will never backtrack on that.
The Biden administration claims that there are no tangible economic and political reforms in Zimbabwe. What is your reaction to that?
As far as human rights, politics, and rule of law, we have not witnessed any human rights gross violations in a long time in Zimbabwe. As we know that these were caused or made by the opposition, being sponsored by USA itself, and we have all the evidence that the US has been sponsoring, you know, animosity in Zimbabwe. So, I mean, honestly, to speak, they say in God we trust, but I don't believe that they're really honest about what they're doing, because they are the ones who are perpetrators of our freedom. They are the ones who are causing, who are infringing the freedoms of our people in Zimbabwe. So, yes, we say the U.S. should stay away from Zimbabwe. They should leave our politics. They should leave our economy. We are going to sort our economy by ourselves as Zimbabweans.
Do these targeted sanctions have any impact on ZANU-PF officials?
These sanctions don't have impact on officials as much as they do to the citizens, to the poor people, to a child who just finished high school or who just finished university trying to look for the first job in his or her life. These sanctions are actually for those that are in hospitals who are not able to get enough medication. These sanctions are for a hungry child who is on the street without nobody to feed them. These sanctions are for an investor who wants to invest in Zimbabwe but is told, if you invest in Zimbabwe, we will put you on sanctions. So you cannot tell me that these sanctions are targeted. Actually, we are going to ask the president to make a forum of people, those patriotic Zimbabweans who want to even be sent to New York to challenge the United States government to show us the evidence that why that these sanctions are targeted. These sanctions are not targeted. Our people are suffering because of these sanctions.
That was Regis Charumbira, ZANU-PF's provisional chairperson, speaking with Gabe Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service from Ottawa, Canada. Kenya received 1 million Oxford AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccines on Tuesday, the first East African nation to get a shipment of the serums. The Ministry of Health said it would set aside 400,000 coronavirus jabs for the country's medical workers. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
James Kamau, in his 60s, is one of the millions of Kenyans living with HIV. The father of two is excited about the COVID-19 vaccines arriving in the country.
Given the opportunity, I will, because it is to my advantage that I take the vaccine. If I took the BCG vaccine, even without being asked, and it is still advantageous, then I don't see the reason why not. I'm more immunocompromised than ordinary, so it is even more highly recommended. Yes, of course, we don't know what the side effects would be, but in my view, the benefits will outshine the side effects, if there are any.
Kenya received its first batch of the vaccines Tuesday night. Some 400,000 health workers will be given priority, followed by the elderly and people with existing health conditions like Kamau. Kenya has an estimated 50 million people, so 1 million doses is just a drop in the bucket. Speaking to journalists after receiving the vaccines at the airport, Health Minister Mutahi Kagwe assured the country there will be more medicines arriving and there was no need to fear.
This is only the first arrival. There will be more vaccines coming through, and therefore we don't want anybody to panic and to think that they are not going to get vaccinated. So the other point is that it is a voluntary thing. It is not mandatory vaccination. People who want to be vaccinated will be vaccinated, and we hope that it will be a majority of the people.
Kenya is one of the few African countries that have received coronavirus vaccines. Catherine Choktunji is the head of the African Population and Health Research Center. She says the biggest challenges for Africa are to get enough doses and to overcome widespread misconceptions and disinformation about the vaccines.
For the person on the street, sometimes it's hard to distinguish between the different technologies which have been used for developing the vaccines. So there are some misconceptions about whether it's safe, whether it was developed too fast, whether corners have been cut. But the vaccines have all gone through rigorous trials. Their safety and efficacy has been established, and the government has put in place the right systems to make sure that they are the right thing for the country.
Governments around the world have approved the vaccines and encouraged their citizens to get vaccinated. So far, more than 50 million people in the United States have received at least one dose of either Pfizer or Moderna vaccines. Kenya recorded its first case of coronavirus in March last year. So far, more than 100,000 people have contracted the virus and at least 1,000 have died. This African nation still has a nighttime curfew in place and banned public gatherings to limit the virus spread. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Senegalese authorities on Wednesday arrested an opposition politician who is facing charges for alleged rape. Ousmane Sonko was on his way to court when his supporters got into a scuffle with security forces. He has denied the allegations, saying they are politically motivated and intended to remove him from contention in the 2024 presidential race. Ibrahim Makan is a Senegalese political analyst.
Ousmane Sonko gets a request from the judge who is in charge of the alleged rape case, and he asked him to come at 9 o'clock to his office to start the discussion on the case to get his version of the rape allegations. So in the morning, he decided to take his car to go to the place with, I think, one of his lawyers. But at a junction in Dakar, in the place called Mermoz, he wanted to turn on his right, but the police asked him to continue straight away so that he can use the corniche to reach the Palais de Justice. And then they started having conversation on why he should follow what the police is saying without taking his own way. There was a big crowd who was trying to accompany him to the Palais de Justice, so that the situation started to be a little bit electric. And then the police decided to arrest him because the prosecutor decided that he was organizing a rally that was not authorized and disturbing the neighborhood. So that's a new case in addition to the one that he was going to respond to at the request of the juge d'instruction.
As you mentioned, Sonko was going to see a judge for a rape allegation against him. He claims that these allegations are politically motivated and an attempt to sideline him for the 2024 election.
Well, you know, in Senegal, the recent years, many politicians were prevented to participate in election by the government simply by using the judiciary against them. And this one, because we are heading into election in the next 3 years, and the only opposition figure is Sonko, and Sonko believes that this alleged rape case is just a way for the state to prevent him from getting there. But in the other side, we need at least to acknowledge the fact that there was an accusation and that he needs to respond to those accusations.
What can you tell us about this immunity that apparently he has or has been stripped from him?
Yes, you know, according to the constitution of Senegal, a member of parliament cannot be arrested or cannot be questioned by any official, be it police or a judge, if he is not stripped of his immunity by the parliament. So from the beginning of this case, the gendarmerie wanted to hear him on the case. Unfortunately for them, because Sonko really said that he has an immunity, And then a process was started to lift the immunity by the parliament, which was done on last Friday, but lifted for him to respond to the rape allegation. Now, we don't know if that immunity is for everything, because today he was arrested for another issue.
Ibrahim Makan is a Senegalese political analyst. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dakar. Despite a recommendation by the African Union for member country to seek a 30% representation of females in their national parliament, women in Liberia, a country that elected the continent's first female president, say they continue to face many challenges. Female independent senatorial candidate Boto Kane, who won a seat in the Liberian Senate in December 2020, says she wants the country's Supreme Court to intervene in expediting certification of her election to the Senate. Rita Jababwe reports from Monrovia.
Kane, an independent candidate and businesswoman, defeated Afre Kwewu of the ruling Coalition for Democratic Change, CDC, in the Gbapolu County senatorial election last December, but her certification is being delayed by the Elections Commission. Her lawyers filed an appeal with the Supreme Court of Liberia for redress. Kane says she is being challenged by the ruling party because she is a female and a commoner. But she says she is certain that she will take her seat in the upper house of the Liberian legislature.
Sometimes people can take people by the look because of the castigation. The people been carrying around, the woman is a driving seller, the woman is a common cocoa seller. You think I'm a humiliation when it comes to people. People can take advantage of that. I believe that's why they are doing that. But the best place to get redress is the Supreme Court, so we decided to go to the Supreme Court for redress.
Kane says getting the phone so far as her legal fees has been challenging for her as a female.
They gave us 7 days to accept it. Within the 7 days, you carry money from there, they'll call on us. So the time is not yet scheduled until we can pay the money.
Kane is not the only female struggling for representation in the Liberian Senate. Ide Gongluwe of Nema County is equally battling the ruling party for a seat in the upper house. Madam Weah was denied a recount of ballots in electoral districts number 4, 5, and 7 and a rerun election in districts number 1 and 3 in Nema County. She says the hearing officer of the Elections Commission denied her complaint for lack of substantial evidence.
We took an exception and filed the bill of exception to the office of the Board of Commissioners. The Board of Commissioners heard the argument last Friday. We are yet to hear from them when the final verdict will be made. And so we are waiting for that hearing, and depending on how the Board of Commissioners rule, we will make the next determination.
Lekane Gonglo also says the lack of funding to pay for her legal fees is a major impediment to getting justice in Liberia.
We have challenges with financing the process coming from an election that was financially intense, and then having to go through this process is just emotionally draining because Nimba County is a rural county, very challenging roads to travel on, and to do that for months at this point, it just gets a little bit emotionally challenging.
Senator Nyombli Kanga Lawrence, the only female senator and head of the opposition collaborating political parties in Liberia, describes the situation of Kane and Gonglo as unfortunate. She says if nothing is done to address the issue, women in Liberia will fear venturing into politics.
The issue with Madam Edith Gonglo and Boto Kane is a sad issue, especially when many women are not attracted to politics because of fear of coming into a battle in a men's world where they don't have the resources. And when women campaign very hard and reach at the level where it's time to win, they are taken to court.
Madam Kanga Lawrence says Liberian women will hold a rally this week to raise money to help finance the court proceedings of Kane and Gonglo.
The Women of Liberia rally to first bring Boto Kane to safety because she was attacked. Now we are raising money to take her case to the Supreme Court. The same with Edith Gonglo. Today the women are having a rally to raise money to pay for the court processes. If we do not do that, women will get discouraged by that and they will not want to come to the political table.
Currently, the Liberian Senate has one female member. Whether Kane and Ganglo will be the second and third female senators will depend on the judgment of the Supreme Court of Liberia. Rita Jrawe, VOA News, Monrovia, Liberia.
Nigeria has one of the world's highest numbers of out-of-school children, 13.2 million, according to the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF. A wave of school kidnappings has worsened the situation, with some state authorities closing down boarding schools in their states until security is guaranteed. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The most recent attack on schools in Nigeria came last Friday when gunmen abducted 279 schoolgirls from a government secondary school in northwestern Zamfara state. A week before then, some 42 people, including 27 schoolboys, were kidnapped in a school in Kagara in central Niger state. So far, all abducted school children have been freed through negotiations, but UNICEF says the recent spate of abductions is having a huge impact on education in Nigeria. Peter Hawkins is UNICEF Nigeria country representative.
At a time when the pandemic is rife and some parents have withdrawn their children from school or have not sent their children back to school, the insecurity and the threat to educational facilities can only compound an already difficult situation.
Since the recent wave of kidnappings by criminal gangs demanding ransom, many state authorities, including those in Kano, Yobe, Niger, and Zamfara, have ordered the closure of boarding schools. Nigeria Union of Teachers spokesperson Emmanuel Huendi says the closures will have consequences.
It will disrupt the free flow of academic calendar. It will disrupt the flow of the children's educational pursuit to subject the child to trauma.
UNICEF says the closing down of schools is not the best approach.
The answer insecurity against schools is not to close the schools down. It's to improve the security, improve the connection between the school and the community so the community themselves offer some semblance of security.
Most of the affected children can be found in the crisis-hit north of the country. Many accuse the government of being insensitive to the dangers there. President Muhammadu Buhari has promised to bolster security around schools while adding that security forces will continue to apply restraint when dealing with bandits to avoid children being used as human shields. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
And that's it for this Thursday, March 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clot, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to Ndumbulu and Makosa to Kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.